Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Hi, my name is Agile, and I support Gen X Grown Up through Patreon, and I believe you should too. Just go to patreon.com/GenXGrownUp.
No life, no fun. Don't you know that you're a grown up?
Gen X Grown Up is a YouTube channel, website, and audio podcast you're listening to right now. All made for and by people who love exploring media, games, tech, and toys of yesterday and today through the eyes of Gen Xers who refuse to grow up.
Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown up.
Welcome back, Gen X Grown Up podcast listeners, to episode 77 of the Gen X Grown Up podcast. I am John. Joining me, as always, is George.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
And Mo is here.
Hey, everybody.
In this episode, we will check out a variety of themed puzzles and toys from 1983, play the latest entry of the mind-bending game series, Where Time Only Moves When You Do, and Netflix offers up a mafia-focused documentary series that we can't refuse. Something else we can't refuse is email from our fourth listeners. Another segue. What do you think?
You like it? Wow, you're right, George. He's working hard at these segues, isn't he?
Yeah, it's the one thing I can do.
He's typing them out 6 weeks in advance and spell checking and grammar checking.
If somebody watched this show, I have a segue for it. But yes, we love it when our fourth listeners write in. And the fourth listener that wrote in this episode, you guys remember months ago, we got an email from The Historian. You remember him?
Oh, I think so.
Yeah, vaguely.
Yeah, kind of. Well, he always drops some knowledge on us. So absolutely, The Historian wrote in again with the subject line, "And that's not all, ...
Uh-oh, that sounds kind of ominous.
He says, "Great show, guys. Just one nugget of trivia for you. Ron Popeil's half-sister, Lisa, actually sings background vocals on the Weird Al song, Mr. Popeil, that we talked about in the
Wow,
that scene on TV episode."
That's some serious trivia. Thank you.
Yeah, it is. That's a deep cut right there.
I thought I knew Weird Al trivia pretty darn well, and I had no idea about that.
No, me either.
Yeah. Anyway, he signs off AFL.
AFL.
Another fourth listener.
Oh.
He explains to us. Yeah. Historian.
That's great.
Very cool. Thank you. We love it every time the fourth listener writes in. Thank you, Historian, for writing. And if you want your email featured here on the show, just hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. We read every single one and most make the show. Now, before we get into the body of this show, you'll notice that lately I have not been reading any new iTunes reviews.
Yeah,
that's true.
Conspicuous by its absence. Well, we haven't been getting any more for a while. We've got, 70 or 80, 100 reviews up there. If you listen, though, it really helps if you will take a moment to hop over into iTunes or wherever you listen that allows you to review and just say what you think about the show. I mean, say it's great, say it's terrible, say George is right all the time. We'll get that one deleted.
Damn right. No, what do you mean get it deleted?
Like that'll happen. You're funny.
Yeah, I know. That's not true.
Mate, both of y'all kiss my ass.
So we just wanted to put out a fresh plea. If you have been listening a while and we haven't mentioned it in a while, we'd appreciate if you would head over to iTunes and drop us a review. It really helps people find the show and it means so much to us. All right, with that good business behind us, let's head into the body of the show right after this. Cool.
A lot of long-distance companies would like you to think they're just like AT&T, but take a closer look and see how different they really are. No operator service, no immediate credit for wrong numbers, and no service for many small towns. Only one long-distance company gives you full service, only AT&T.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Well, let's get started with the media segment. Could be anything we're checking out in the world of media, you know, books or comics or TV shows or movies or whatever it is. And why don't we get started with you, George? What have you been checking out?
Well, first of all, before we get into the particular series that I've been watching, I want to just briefly mention that in the middle of this COVID pandemic that we're all going through and we're trying to find our way in this new world right now, believe it or not, sports is actually slightly making a comeback recently. Soccer, both in Europe as well as the United States, has been coming back, and I found it very interesting that they are playing in what they're calling these sports bubbles. So they're taking all the teams that are going to play in a league and they're sticking them in one city, and they have to be tested and tested and tested for weeks at a time, and then they're allowing them to start playing. But oddly enough, there's no fans in any of the stadiums or stands.
Of course. I've seen some of what they do in Europe, like in Asia. They've done some pretty creative things with that, though. But
they have. And one of the cool creative things that they've been doing is they've been piping in crowd noise into these stadiums while the soccer players are playing and while you're listening or watching at home. So it's almost like a laugh track from an 80s sitcom. And they're amping it up whenever somebody does something good. And if the home team scores a goal, it's a big roar. And if it's the other team, it's like some boos or quietness or something. It's really interesting how they're using these computer models and all these different algorithms to lend that air of authenticity to these sporting matches.
Is it actually a crowd from somewhere watching the event, or just like some canned crowd noise?
It's all canned, right?
It's all canned noise. Yeah. I mean, there are people that are watching it, and they're even encouraging people to go on things like Twitter and Facebook and share their home camera live streams with the game audience. And then they project it up on these giant billboards. So if you're a fan of, you know, whatever soccer team, Manchester United, you can go to this thing, pop in your link, and they might pick your webcam to be displayed on the giant board that's in the stadium where the soccer players are actually playing. And then it shows up on the broadcast because the cameras are panning around.
Necessity is the mother of invention, I guess.
Yeah.
You can't be there. It sounds so empty if you just, you know, go! Cricket, 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 cricket.
Right. And I've watched a few of those games that they turned off the canned noise. And they're awful.
Weird.
It's really bad to watch. I thought it was bad enough to watch a sporting event without announcers. You know, the NFL tried that like 40 years ago.
Oh, I remember.
It's terrible. But it's even worse without crowd noise. It's
amazing.
We're
just so conditioned to that. That's part of the experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tell you, like at the PGA Tour, they, you know, they don't have anybody there at their events either. And it was funny because I saw somebody at the very first event made a hole in one and he didn't know.
Just crickets.
He just didn't know what happened because he wasn't standing there.
He
nobody
the
cheered.
It's like, oh, good shot.
It's a good
He's
point.
Walking, he had no idea he had a hole in one.
And there's not like 50 guys lining the course that holding up, you know, the quiet please signs or anything.
Yeah, we don't need them anymore.
They don't need it.
Quiet is taken care of. No worry.
Well, enough about sports. I just thought that was an interesting fact that people would like to pay attention to, especially with Major League Baseball starting up this past week. You know, it's always neat to see these things coming back. But I have actually been watching a series on Netflix. It was a limited 3-episode series called Fear City.
I saw this pop up in the feed, but I haven't seen it yet. Okay.
Well, and that's how I found it. It popped up on that giant banner at the beginning, you know, when you go to your homepage that you can never disable and you can't decide what's on it. It's just Netflix says, screw you, you're going to watch this eventually because I'm not letting go until you do.
Yeah. Yep. And you hate it when they're right also.
I know.
That's
pisses
the worst
me
part.
Off. This series takes place in the main heyday of the modern mafia, the 70s and the 80s.
Okay.
So it's all about the mafia and how they were taken down by the New York law enforcement agencies. And it's really interesting because they're talking about how they had to get, you know, wiretaps and how they actually had to get the bugs into the places. I thought that part was really cool. There's some stuff even in the 80s segment, the third episode, with Rudy Giuliani, and he's not looking completely crazy like he is oftentimes in the media right now.
Right. It's the pre-9/11 Rudy Giuliani.
Right. I loved seeing all the different, you know, real videos that the FBI agents made, you know, like surveillance stuff and the pictures. And they talked about, oh, this was the only time that the council met together and we actually got them coming out of the house. And it's the actual photos that they took. It's stuff that we all kind of know if you watched news during the 70s or 80s. I'm sure you picked up on a lot of it.
No, sure.
You being from New York, I was just curious, is that something that was really big on your radar at that time?
That's huge. That was always a big news lead story when I did that, because one, it was just ongoing. you know, see, like every mm-hmm. other day there was like some other mafia person was arrested or yeah, it was definitely a big deal back then.
Yeah. And I think the main focal point of this series was building up to when they brought in the main heads of the five crime families. One of them had died himself already. Another one was murdered. And then there were three left and they indicted all of them, plus a whole bunch of their lieutenants and capos and all that stuff. They indicted like 35 mafia leaders at one time.
Wow.
And then they got convictions on all of them. And yeah, it was just okay. Wow. This crazy thing. And it's like, that's what set up some of the future ones that John, you and I might recognize as well. Like John Gotti, he got him right. set up because all the leadership had been taken out and he was one of the few left. So now
you're still there. Okay. Yeah. So you've watched all of this now. So I had a couple mm-hmm. questions that I didn't immediately watch it, that I was waiting for somebody else who was the guinea pig that had seen it. So,
right.
So my curiosity first is sometimes these true crime documentary things, they're just riding a wave and they'll just crank out anything. What's the quality of it like? Like the quality of the documentary? Is it like fun to watch, intriguing to watch, the storytelling? How is that?
Yeah, it's absolutely fun to watch. It's well put together. Nothing takes too long to develop or develops too quickly. You know, it hits that Goldilocks spot, I think.
Yeah, that's good. And the second question is, the assertion in this is that they brought down the mafia. Are they saying that the mafia is gone? Because is it ever really gone? Is it?
Well, they do lead you toward that conclusion. And of course, being people of intelligence, we tend to think for ourselves a little bit. I don't think the mafia is completely gone.
No.
But I would argue that it's probably had its power reduced significantly by the activities of the people in this documentary.
Because I figure somewhere in Hell's Kitchen, there's a mafia boss watching this documentary and going, they think we're gone. You know?
Right. Like, just like we planned.
He knows better. Right. Excellent. They think we're not here. That's awesome.
You know, it's kind of gotta have been watered down a little bit, at least their power and influence. I mean, because they've had mafia boss wives TV shows now.
Right. Yeah.
I mean,
I get it.
I don't think they're the same mafia that they were. I'm not saying that they're not around and they're not doing, you know, mafia style things, loan sharking and drug
pushing. It's mafia light now. It's not the full sugar mafia any longer. All right.
I did not say that, just in case any. You know,
right. It was John that said that, not Mo.
Mafia people out there listening.
Don't whack Mo. He's not the one that did it.
Well, that's what I've been watching. It's a really cool documentary. But Mo, I think you've been watching a documentary as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's called Jodorowsky's Dune. I saw that because, you know, the new Dune movie's coming out later this year. And I ran across this one. I heard about this one. This is about actually a failed attempt to make a movie from like one of my favorite novels of all time. Okay, let me tell you what this movie had going for it. Okay, imagine a movie starring Orson Welles, David Carradine, Mick Jagger, Salvador Dali.
No.
Yes.
Music by Pink Floyd.
Oh, okay. I'm back on board.
Set designs by Giger, who did like all the Alien.
Right. H.R. Giger. Right. H.R. Alien Giger stuff. Yep.
And who did all the storyboards was an artist named Mobius, who if you're into heavy metal, all that kind of art.
Yeah.
This is what they had going for it.
So where can I watch this movie?
It never got made.
God damn it.
Wait till you find out what they had going against it.
Yeah.
And that was Jodorowsky himself.
Yeah, the guy was like out there, man. He's like one of these art film guys. You know, he makes very arty, very bizarre kind of stuff that I guess if you're really into theater, you appreciate. But every normal person be like, what the hell kind of thing.
Okay.
And there was a couple other problems. Like one is that he refused to compromise on the movie length.
Yeah, he did.
Because back then they wanted movies to be like 2 hours or so.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, no. This movie has to be at least 10 hours long.
10 hours long?
Yeah. There's a comment by somebody who saw the script that said the script was the size of a phone book.
The interesting thing is just how much work was actually put into this movie that was never made.
Like the pre-production visualization stuff, really.
He has a book that I wish I could find a copy of this thing where Mobius did panels of every single shot of the movie.
Right.
And it was 300 something pages long.
So it's another phone book. All right. Yeah,
with artwork from Giger. I bet you it looked just, it'd be a really cool thing to go through and
so
read.
What was this movie going to be? Was it a sequel to the Dune that we know?
This is back in 74.
So it was before the Dune we know got made. Yeah. He was going to make Dune first.
Right. And he got he got the rights to do it for cheap because at the time no one was really looking to do a movie of this kind of book because they thought it was too cerebral, too long. No one really wanted to touch it. But he wanted to do it because he wanted to do something as good as like 2001, which came out like 5 years before and all that stuff. And this guy, listening to him talk, you can see that he's definitely out there, the Jodorowsky. But looking at just what he was trying to put together, talk about it. ambitious. I mean, he had a vision and he was going to do it. And then basically everyone's like, all the major studios are like, you know, you're kind of out there.
He had gotten a lot of financial backing. He got like $10 million of the $15 million he wanted to make the film. And this is back in 74. So you think about upping that number to whatever today's dollar value is worth.
That's only $1.5 million per hour. That's one deal.
And the funny thing was that like Salvador Dali, of all people, right? You'll think him as like leading guy.
Yeah. Was it going to be an actor in it?
Yes. He was going to play a role.
He was going to be the emperor himself.
Yes, the actual emperor. And the funny thing was that Dali, who's another out there character, right?
Yeah.
He said that he would do it, but he had to be the highest paid actor in history. Mm-hmm. And he wanted $100,000 an hour.
Per hour.
Jeez.
And so Jodorowsky said, sure. And then cut him down to only a few minutes of dialogue. And then they had a robot who's going to say
Do the rest of the scenes for that character. Yes.
So anyway, it was just an interesting documentary. And then you look at all these, like, they also like look at modern film critics, all this stuff who read through the script and all that stuff. And they're like, you know, they said this is probably the greatest movie that was never made.
And this is a documentary that's been out there for a little while, right?
Documentary came out in 2013, I think, somewhere around there.
Yeah, but it's kind of come to the top of your watch list because of the promise of the new Dune on the horizon.
Right, exactly. I mean, again, also, he didn't really go with the script at all. He kind of went way off script as far as the book. But it was very interesting to see a person with a passion project that was just like, it wasn't like he had casting calls. He said, I want this person for this role because he had in his head who he wanted. And he went after this person. He saw David Carradine in Kung Fu, and he's like, that's who I want for this role.
So he was kind of like the auteur of filmmakers. Right. He just had he thought this grand vision was it. All right.
It was it. And he was not compromising either. So, but it was a very interesting documentary.
Well, we didn't compromise. We didn't make the movie. So he made no compromises. Exactly.
Yeah, I guess that's one thing. All right. And he's still around too. So he actually did a lot of the commentary, which was interesting.
Ah, okay.
But yeah, so I think it was definitely a good watch. It was very, very interesting to see, especially if this is done in the 70s, which also blows my mind.
And it's called Jodorowsky's Dune. Did I say that right?
That's what it's called.
Jodorowsky,
yeah, you
something
said it
like
perfectly.
That.
So, John, you have a pretty bold thing here.
I have something that I found,
and
I'm going to absolutely make a bold statement here at the outset. So I found a film.
Okay.
Mo and George, after we talk about this film and you go watch it, if you don't like it, I will pay you each $5.
I hated it. George, how about you?
No. Well, once you see it, you will not be able to lie. You're going to love it so much.
See, if you want to tempt us with that kind of a bet, though, the dollar value needs to be a little bit higher. Like $5? Okay, I'll tell you the truth. Fine, whatever. But if you put like a $100 bill on that statement, then I might be tempted to lie. So it would be a truer test of whether or not I really like that film.
No, the lower dollar amount makes you truthful. The higher one, you're just going to take the money. That's why I did it that way.
You have to believe in the film so much that it'll override my sense of greed
in order to tell the truth. In your sense of greed more than I believe in my film criticism.
George, he does have a point there.
So it's $5. Anyway, so the film that I found, we've been taking a lot of stuff from the horror-only streaming service called Shudder.
Yeah, they have some really cool stuff, actually.
Yeah, they had series about the cursed films, and they had the new Tales from the Crypt was out there.
Yeah,
So I found this film on Shudder called Scare Package. The cover of it is what initially grabbed my attention, which, remember the old, you're walking through the VHS racks in Blockbuster or Movie Gallery, and there's that film House that's like a skeletal hand ringing a doorbell.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
The cover of Scare Package is kind of like that hand holding a VHS cover. And on the cover is the cover. It's like that tunnel of mirrors.
Oh, right.
Oh.
Right. The VHS he's holding is the film. Anyway, the point is, it was reminiscent of the very, very kind of 70s and 80s horror cover on it. And I'm like, I want to check it out. And I looked a little bit into it. This came out in 2019. It's a comedy horror film.
Okay. That's actually tough to pull off.
Oh, I can't wait to watch this again. I want to watch this with you guys. It's just so good. The thing is that they tell a large story, but it's kind of an anthology. So it's these seven little stories.
Okay.
That seamlessly go together and they start weaving their way together. The magic of it is it's seven different production crews and directors and editors and film scores. It's all this group of horror film enthusiasts got together, and this is a quality production. And it, every single trope in horror film, anything, is absolutely in there. Little nods to things. Like at one point, a guy puts up his top on his convertible and it's striped that muddy green and red, like it's Freddy's coat. You know, it's like this foreshadowing. Got he has it. A bobblehead on his car that very much looks like Pennywise the clown. But not just callbacks. It's all the tropes. The first scene is you're seeing a guy and his job, he hates that he's in horror films, but his job, he knows he's in horror films, like a fourth wall breaking thing. His job is to cause the chaos.
What?
So he walks in the beginning of this scene and there's a sign in the middle of the road that says this, like an arrow pointing this way to abandoned mental asylum. and he turns the arrow the wrong way because he reads a note in his pocket, tells him to do it. He walks off and people pull up and go, oh, the campsite's supposed to be this way. No, it's the mental asylum. Go that way. And of course they drive to the mental asylum. And this guy is upset because he never gets to be in the movie. He just does that. Like, he knows he's in movies.
Got it.
And then the tropes of, like, you kill the guy and he gets back up again, right? You know how there's always, you cannot kill the monster, the Freddy Krueger.
Of course
or the,
not. Yeah.
There's a whole scene and they literally have the bad guy strapped to a chair and they're trying to find ways to kill him and it's not working. They're just trying and trying and trying. And the way the stories weave together, they're, at one point they're locked in a room together and he's looking around. He's like, okay, so you're the jock, you're the virgin, you're the slut. Hey, you're this guy. That must make you last girl. You're going to win. And of course, only this one guy knows he's in the film. The other people are just living the film. At every point, I chuckled over and over and over. There's hilarious stuff. And it feels like a 70s, 80s film. Nobody's got a damn cell phone. Everybody makes stupid decisions. Anything you ever liked about it. I know Mo, you and George, even more to a degree, you love that era of, you know, Halloween and Friday the 13th.
Oh, absolutely.
And I thought about you guys the whole way through watching this. Like, I cannot wait to tell you about this. And that got me to my proposal that you have to watch it. And I dare you to tell me you didn't like it.
Well, here's an interesting little twist on that then. You know, Plex and all these other streaming services, Netflix has it or Amazon, a lot of them have this new thing about watch together because they recognize the COVID-19 issue. And so they're like, well, we can't actually sit down on a couch and watch Netflix together, but
I know,
they're putting that watch together part of their app so you can do it remotely. What if we watch this together via one of those things?
100%. Yes.
And then you could really get a straightforward answer out of us as to whether or not we liked it or not, because we couldn't lie to you.
100%.
What we could do is put a still of our faces, not having any expression. That's all he would see.
That's right. So on the conference call, I think you're not enjoying it. You mute your laughter. Yeah, that'd be cheating. Exactly. Yeah. 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 I would love to watch this together with you guys. You're going to love it. People that listen to our show, I think they're going to love it. The kind of stuff that we dig. And the good news is if you don't have Shudder, if you're on Amazon, you can get a 7-day free trial of Shudder through Amazon just to get started. You can check out a lot of the stuff we've been talking about, including this scare package that, man, this is a justification for the existence of that network. If this kind of stuff is going to come out of Shudder, then absolutely. What a great thing to exist.
Wow.
The gauntlet has been thrown down, so go earn your $5.
Or not.
Well, that's easy.
They auctioned off my pine, your daddy bought it. That's when I first met him. I love that story, Mama.
And I love your cooking, honey.
Well, Crisco's what makes it taste so special. That pie looks real tempting.
Where do you try it?
The filling is rich and chocolatey, but nothing makes my crust flakier than Crisco.
That just melts in my mouth.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
And now we're into tech and toys, and I'm going to save myself for last this time because I actually have something.
Because
like
you have
about.
Something?
Because I have something, yes.
Normally you're last because you have nothing to do.
Hey, I resemble that remark.
Call me a liar.
All right, so let's kick it off with you, George. What do you got for us this week?
Well, you know, in the previous segment, I was talking a little bit about watching stuff together on Plex, and I wanted to bring up a couple of new little news tidbits about the Plex service. So we all have talked a little bit here and there on the air and off the air about Plex Amp. That is mm-hmm. the audio media mm-hmm. processor thing that you can use on your phone, and you can listen to all the music that's on your Plex server. And it yep. has radio stations configured on it, kind of like, you know, Spotify or any of those things, but it's of your actual MP3s or whatever you have for your yeah. mm-hmm. audio.
It's great. Yep.
Well, finally, the one thing that we were asking for when we were talking about it back then, Plex Amp is now a part of Android Auto.
Hallelujah. Yes.
Right.
So good. Oh, yes.
That's great. Yeah. Whatever. All right. Yeah.
Sorry, iPod boy or whatever the hell you're using. No, but we've been waiting for it to happen for a while. Yeah, it's yeah. really nice. The interface is still, I think, in like the bare bones kind of stage, like it's their first iteration, but probably it fair. Works, which is yeah, all does. I really care about.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, I really like Plex Amp. I use it all the time, and it's just such a good job of listening to your music and the way it kind of fades your music together, even like it does the fade in, fade out.
These intelligent crossfades. Yeah, yeah, I was going to mention that. Yeah, ever since I first discovered it, you know, I was, you know, explaining to my wife, I'm like, you know, you listen to music from our Plex server, you could use this Plex Amp thing. And of course, she challenges me, how is it different from just using the Plex server? And, you know, I'm like, well, quite a bit, because it does. It takes music and it doesn't just play them back to back. It looks at the levels and it does these crossfades that are intelligent, and it makes it sound like somebody put together a mixtape for you, is yeah. what it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely. And the nice thing is, you can also control all of those settings, which that's, I think, unique to Plex. Mm-hmm. You can change how those crossfades happen if you want. You can make them longer, shorter, non-existent. Mm-hmm. You can change the different ways that it presents music to you. I really think that they have done a great job of making the interface usable and user-friendly and user-configurable all at the same time.
I would agree with you. As soon as you mentioned to me,
that's pretty rare.
I don't know, last week sometime, you said, hey, you know this is an Android Auto? Cut off the phone with you. I took my keys out to the car to try it right away, because I'm like, yes, awesome. And it, yeah, it's serviceable. I think they have room to grow, like you said, mm-hmm. but I'm so happy that they're continuing to develop it. And such. I mean, it might work in CarPlay. Who knows, Mo? Do you use Apple CarPlay in your vehicle, or is that something?
Actually, no, I don't. My truck's too old for that.
Oh, okay.
But I do yeah. use Plex App in my truck.
Yeah.
Do Bluetooth.
So it already works okay. Right. It's just not on the screen like your thing. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. The other thing I like cool. about Plex App is it'll even do like playlists based on criteria of your library.
Oh, and, yeah.
Exactly.
So smart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I can say 70s and they'll find 70s.
Decades
songs.
Radio. Exactly. Yep. Yeah.
Of your stuff.
Yeah. It's yep. pretty cool.
Now, you said you had a couple things about Plex. What else?
I did. So oddly enough, just last week, this was announced through some emails. And John, I know I called you on it pretty quickly to let you know what was going on. Plex now actually has live TV streamed through the app.
Yeah, I saw
even
that.
Without having a digital antenna. You don't have to have an antenna plugged up. You just get live streaming. Now, the channels are completely unique.
It's not the TV you think
They're
it is.
They're not what you think of. No.
Right. Yeah. It's not. Well, can I watch NBC? No, 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 no.
But that's the thing that I like about this. It's channels that are curated toward a specific subject matter, as opposed to channels that are, like John said, NBC, ABC, a that network, have a variety of entertainment on them. And I think they've done this because that's kind of the way digital streaming has gone. Mm-hmm. John, you talk about Shudder. That's all about horror, right?
Yeah.
You talk about all these other services out there, Disney Plus, that's only Disney stuff. So I think they're kind of moving in that direction. I would not be surprised if in 20 years, when I'm so old that I'm like, you young kids today and you're whatever.
That's today. You do that now.
Right. But I wouldn't be surprised if at that point, things like NBC have gone away, because people want to go to a channel that they know what it's about and watch stuff that channel is focused on.
Have you guys used it yet? I haven't used it yet.
I have.
Yeah. Yeah. I've tried
yes.
it.
Is it commercial? Like, do they show commercials? How does it?
So they do, but they show Plex commercials. So the commercials are all geared toward Plex itself. That I've seen so far. And there's not a lot of them. It's just one here and there. My guess is that as people start to use the service more,
they'll sell that spots.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and they'll probably have more of the ad spots as well, I think.
Oh, I'm sure there will. Yeah. Yeah. It will, especially if it takes off. The other interesting thing I found is you can't pause this TV. It's live TV.
Right.
There's no time shifting. You can't record it for later, and you cannot pause it if you want to get up and, you know, go get a drink or something. It's like old school Gen X TV that you're watching through Plex.
With all the pain that comes with it.
cool feel of, you know, having right,
with the more
channels.
Curated, like you said, for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of channels too.
There are. There's at least like 80 channels or 50 mm-hmm. to 80 Jeez. Channels, something like that. And there's even a section of them down at the very end that we'll all appreciate. It's all music channels.
There's like videos in?
No videos, just the music channels. Like, remember when you first got cable and they said you got 500 channels and 430 of them were audio just channels? Audio.
Yeah. They were all easy listening.
Yeah. Because that's the only one who listened to music over their TV.
Exactly. Because that was cool.
I found myself channel flipping. Like, when's mm-hmm. the last time you did channel flipping? And I was right. doing that. Yeah, because I can't pause it and it's just going to be what it is. And I'm just like, well, let's see what's next. Let's see what's next. And I haven't channel flipped in 2 decades. And now I did with this new Plex thing. So
now there is an indication that they're going to add a DVR service into this because they talk in the email about combining it with the one that works with your digital antenna tuner thing. So that one you can record and pause on. They're talking mm-hmm. about integrating it with the Plex DVR service. So I think that that's coming if it's not already here by the time you guys hear this podcast. But yeah, it's a very unique service.
Yeah, because I was saying without that DVR thing, like, I mean, yeah, it's like, hey, like old school TV watching. Well, there's a reason why that
But
changed.
Do people want that is the question. Yeah,
exactly. So,
but it's interesting that Plex is growing from an application to watch your media to being a platform itself. And I think that's keeping relevant, which means maybe we back the right horse.
And I love their tagline, too. It's no fees, no law enforcement. It's all free. Check or something like that. So it's like you're not stealing anything. We're giving it to you. You
know? Right.
You get it for $5 a month or whatever my Plex monthly fee is. Something like that. I mean, I wish they had a lifetime one now.
Yeah, you're not kidding. I would already do it, I think.
Well, I did the lifetime Plex pass. Did they not do that anymore?
Do they have it again still? Or I don't know. I haven't looked.
Maybe they stopped.
I
did it years ago. I got the lifetime too back when they offered
it. I'm still grandfathered into the lifetime. So I don't know if it's still around, but
we
it's
need
a great
to go
deal.
Check.
Yep, apparently so.
Well, that's what I've been playing around with tech and toys. John, what about you?
Okay, I want to tell you about something cool that I found, but even more importantly, I need to solicit you guys for advice. Maybe the fourth listeners too.
Okay.
So
anytime John uses the word solicit, it makes me nervous.
Now listen, my record was expunged.
Okay.
So I was at a nerd store here in town locally. They have a lot of, more Star Wars action figures, more pop vinyls, but I'm really looking for old stuff, like R70s, 80s era stuff. And I did find something really novel that I'd never seen before. They had three Dungeons and Dragons jigsaw puzzles from 1983 in the box.
What were they pictures of?
So these were, picture the front of any given Dungeons and Dragons module, right?
Oh, yeah,
of
course.
The beautiful oil paint work. And all three of these puzzles were by Larry Elmore.
Oh, okay.
And so this is, Mo, you probably know every fantasy book you have ever read probably had this Larry Elmore art on it.
He did covers for like everything.
It's basically, if you have a barbarian and there's a scantily clad woman holding a sword and a dragon, right? All of that. And these are all beautiful pieces. They wanted like $35 a piece for these puzzles.
Ooh.
They were opened, but allegedly complete. Okay.
Uh-oh. That's a lot of money for that.
Yeah, but
it seems expensive.
You haven't seen them. They're beautiful.
Well, and a lot of money is relative, Mo. Remember, John makes $7 million a month.
Oh, my God.
So,
oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
That's not really a big deal for him.
Right. Thank you. Exactly right. Not true, by the way. Anyone thinks George is actually factual? No. But anyway, so I got these jigsaw puzzles. I actually put all three of them together. They are complete. That's neat. That could be the end of the story.
But
here's my conundrum. What do I do with these puzzles? So if it were any other puzzle, if I just went up to Walmart today and I bought a cool puzzle of dog peeing on a tree, whatever they sell you, you do the puzzle, you know, they're a dime a dozen. And today what I do is I take the puzzle coat, like Elmer's glue stuff, I paint on it. So now it's solid. I hang it on the wall.
Right.
Okay. But here's the thing. I want to enjoy these puzzles, but they're vintage. They're 1983. They're complete. How do I enjoy them without destroying them? Is preserving them under glue, which is permanent, is that destroying it? If I keep it in the box, can anybody enjoy it? And then it's just a box. It's just a picture. It's not a jigsaw puzzle. And so this is a conundrum that I face sometimes, but it's unique with this puzzle. I can't just put it on the shelf. I either have to damage it to display it, or I have to not display it and hide it away, and I can't even see it and enjoy it. What do I do?
How big are the puzzles?
They're probably like 11 by 17 or so when they're completed. They're only 200-piece puzzles. They're not huge.
I saw a thing at Target that may help you here.
Okay.
It was a picture frame that was actually two pieces of glass. So in other words, it was, so it looks like it's one of these frameless things.
It's like you can sandwich something between.
So you sandwich a thing in between, and maybe that'd be enough to hold the puzzle together.
And there are specialized frames for puzzles that you don't have to use the puzzle glue with as well.
Are there?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, I didn't know.
Okay. And if you can't find one that fits, because the whole point of those frames is that they lock the sides really tightly, so they're measured out for specific puzzle sizes.
Okay.
If you can't find one that fits the dimensions of these, you could always build something out of some balsa wood that you would get from a Hobby Lobby type place.
And a couple of sheets of glass or something.
Yeah, a couple of sheets of glass. Hmm. I would go that route, because if you're going to put the puzzle together, which is what you've done.
Well, I did, yeah.
Putting it back in the box makes no sense to me. Then you're destroying the box,
right.
Which is, okay, great. Yeah. You could do that with the puzzle in it or out of it.
Yippee, ooh, a box. Right?
Yeah.
You wouldn't know the difference.
That's the point. That's the point. If I show it in the box, yawn, it's a box, right?
Right.
The actual, the toy, the beautiful thing is in the box, and you need to display it
I
somehow.
Think you have to display it in some type of a frame, and I think it's very possible to do it without putting the puzzle glue on it.
Okay. That, see, that's why I brought it to the council. Thank you so much. All right. I have to explore that. I didn't know that was a thing. So
yeah, me either. Whew,
thank goodness. All right. I think you've solved my problem. I'll report back what I find out.
Okay.
Mo, how about you? What do you got? You said you had something. You were saving yourself for the end.
Yeah.
Wow, man.
So, so actually, this was inspired by John. So thank you, for inspiring me this. Because you've been doing a lot of the video game-based board games.
On YouTube.
Like Pac-Man, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And so I noticed a conspicuous absence of one, my favorite game, which is Q-Bert. And so I was thinking, I was like, was there a Q-Bert game that was made? And I maybe remember that there was one. And so, of course, you know, I went to eBay, found one.
The place where they resell us our childhood.
Yeah. Paid too much money for the nostalgia and for grasping my misspent youth.
Okay. So what'd you find?
I found a Q-Bert board
Categorized all that when you said eBay, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah, you didn't have to go into any more description. You just have to say eBay.
Just say eBay. That's all.
Everybody knows.
No, so I found two things. I found a Q-Bert board game and a card game.
Yeah, of course.
And so I'm actually going to do like a video for our channel on both of these. But let me tell you, the Q-Bert board game is damn clever how they did
it. Okay.
Yeah, it is very clever. I kind of just played it with myself just to kind of make sure I understood the rules. And, you know, I'm going to get my nephew to probably play with me on this one to really try it out. But it does give you like the little feel of the Q-Bert world. Like you're moving up and down the pyramid blocks. And, and then the other person controls Coily and all that stuff trying to capture you. I thought they're very clever. Now, the card game also seems to be, maybe it's a little bit boring.
The card game I played. I think we played it together once, actually.
SFGE.
It's kind of like you're laying out, you're building the pyramid almost with cards. Right. It's got the isometric thing. Yeah.
And each card has points, and you're trying to build the biggest, the most, the highest point value for your thing. But one, it was like, honestly, and I don't know, John, if you get this feeling when you find these, just looking at them, like, I just got that feeling like when I was like that age.
You're a kid.
You got a new game, and you open it.
Right.
Reading the rules, and, you know, it just took me back. And that was just so cool about this.
There's something so cool about, well, I talked about, I think, the Ms. Pac-Man, but like, it's so optimistic. Like, hey, kids, it's the best Pac-Man you'll ever play on the tabletop and whatever. And it's a snapshot of that more innocent time, or, you know, the less doom and gloom headline time when people weren't worried about, will this sound kind of fruity or whatever? It's like, no, which is friendly and optimistic. And that comes through on everything. Yeah.
I love how you say that hey, kids, this is the best tabletop version of Ms. Pac-Man you'll ever play. And there was an arcade tabletop cabinet.
Right. Yeah, I know.
But the cool thing also is just like getting like paper rules, you know, and reading the,
in this day and age for anything.
Booklet and stuff, you know. I'm happy I bought it just for that experience of, for those couple of hours of just playing with them, you know, and just enjoying them.
Makes the purchase price worth it.
Oh, cool. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we're going to see a Q-Bert card game and board game video coming on YouTube in the future. Awesome.
Yep, absolutely.
All right. Well, people are enjoying them, so I look forward to it.
All right, cool.
I like the 40s and the 50s, and I'm starting to like the 60s, and I know I like the 90s, but I don't like panty lines. That's why I wear underalls.
I like me in hot pink and purple and acid green and aubergine, but I don't like me in panty lines, so I wear underalls.
I like long looks and short looks and long, long shorts looks, but who looks good in panty lines? So I wear underalls, pantyhose and panties all in one.
My name is Cindy Burnett, and each week I interview at least two traditionally published authors on my podcast, Thoughts from a Page. We talk spoiler-free about their books, so you can listen whether you have read the book or not. And then we delve into things that you most likely won't hear about anywhere else. The importance of the cover design, why they included various aspects of the story, personal details about both the books and the authors' lives, and so much more. You can find the podcast on every major platform and learn more about it on my website, thoughtsfromapage.com. Thanks so much for checking it out.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, it's time for the Generation X game segment.
It is.
And unlike Tech and Toys, Mo has nothing to talk about today. So, John, we'll start with you. What game are you playing this week?
Poor Mo.
It's okay.
Yes. Okay. So what am I playing? I was looking forward to a new game the last episode. You remember we're talking about Super Hot.
Ticking boxes, oh, yes. Mo. He's ticking boxes.
I'm That's not just right. ticking
you
boxes.
You always accuse me of that. You're ticking okay. boxes, sir.
All right. I am, but it's also a great game, so I'm going to tell you about it. So Super Hot was this kind of first-person bullet time matrixy thing where time only
torture
moves
device,
when you move.
Whatever.
It's a torture device. I exposed both of you to it. It first came out a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. So there was a sequel coming that I picked up. It was called Super Hot Mind Control Delete. Now, yes. The first game was already kind of weaving a tale, like maybe you were inside of the Matrix and you're playing out these scenarios. This was initially going to be DLC for the first game. It was like in like a pre-release or beta or whatever for a while. And then finally, it grew to such a huge thing that it was more than DLC, but they gave it away to anybody that had the previous game. So I got it for free. So yay me.
Yeah, me too. They didn't give it away to everybody.
Oh, really?
No, you didn't get it for free?
No, I don't have it in my Steam library, and I've reloaded my library like 15
really?
Times. It's not there. I have Super really? Hot, but I don't have a separate line for Super Hot Mind Control Delete. So I'm kind of pissed off at these guys because I've
now,
owned
they
that
use
game
the
for
same
a while.
Launcher. So check it out, because when you launch Super Hot, I don't know that it's a separate line, because when it opens, you pick which game you want to play. So I think maybe they bundled them together.
I thought they were going to be a separate game that was going to be populated in your Steam games tree.
I don't know which is true, but I do have it, so we can investigate that.
Yeah. And I just tell you that also that it just magically appeared on my Steam just by itself.
Oh, it did on yours.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Maybe we just have to drop a service ticket to Steam and get you hooked up, George.
Possibly.
But here is what you have to look forward to, though, mm-hmm. with Mind Control Delete. So I enjoyed the first one, but it did get very samey. It was you're in a room of some kind, these wireframe, like red bad guys are coming after you, and you have to, you know, knock down their bullets with a sword, or you have to throw a gun in their face and grab their gun and shoot them with it. That was great, but it was just another scenario and more guys coming at you. So what they've done in Mind Control Delete is a great expansion on this. So if you like the first one, you're going to love this. Mm-hmm. If you thought it was torture, George, you might like the sequel more because there's a lot more variety in it now.
Yeah.
Well, the torture before was I just couldn't get past like level 4. I was terrible at the game.
Well, I think you might enjoy this more, again, for all these reasons that I'm going to delineate. So first, this is more of an adventure game. So rather than just ticking through one world and kind of achieving it without dying, you actually have hit points now. You have hearts. So you can actually sustain a certain number of attacks before you die. So it's not one and done, which is nice, right? So you get a little forgiveness for people like George that were dying on level 4.
Right.
So that's nice. But because this is all happening like inside of the Matrix, inside of a computer, and it was all kind of computer driven and you're reading text files before, you pick up these what look like floppy disks, these 5 1/4 disks, and they are hack programs that change the world in some fashion. Like there's one that allows you to teleport directly in front of a guy. If he's a long way from you, maybe a bullet's coming toward you, you can jump right in his face, pass the bullet, and punch him right away. They have a hack where you can inhabit the body of an enemy. You jump into him. You trade places. You then see through his eyes as you disappear. If you get hit with a bullet or something, a spray of like throwing star shurikens come flying out of you in every direction. There are all these neat little like hacks and tweaks that make you more powerful. But it's not just like an RPG where you power up. In each level, you might randomly, there'll be a menu said, what do you want? Do you want to start with a random gun or do you want an extra heart? Like, what's the hack you want to try? And so it makes replaying the same levels interesting because you use different powers with each level.
Yeah, I actually played it. And one thing also I noticed I really liked is they seem to have more variety of things to pick up and use.
So many things. Yeah.
It's a lot of fun to pick up like a record, like a LP,
yep.
throw it at somebody.
And it sticks in them.
And it sticks in them.
Like a saw blade. Yeah, like it's
like Shaun of the Dead kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
exactly like that. Right. Yeah.
And one thing I saw that I did is like I threw a knife at one person and I was able to grab that knife again out of the body of that person before he fell and throw it at somebody else. And I was like, that's pretty cool.
The other awesome thing. So the guys that have the scimitars come at you. So like you'll throw a box at them and they slash it down with the scimitar, you could catch the box in the air and throw it at them again. It's like you're playing ping pong with these throwables. The mechanics of this game are really entertaining to me because I can only imagine, like, to the bad guys, you must look like the greatest ninja in the world. Like, spin, grab, throw, dodge.
You're like John Wick on steroids or something, you know?
You really are. Yeah, it's just that you get to do it in slow motion, which is pretty darn cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Mind Control Delete, super hot expansion, is great. If you got it for free, then go play it. There's no reason not to. If you didn't get it for free, like George, we got to investigate because I want you to try it. I think you're going
to
dig it.
But even if you have to buy it, it's not super expensive either.
Yeah, but that's not the point.
It's supposed to be free.
Everybody else got it for free but me. Screw that.
That's right.
I'm saying the people who don't have the original, I think it's like a $20 game or something like that.
And you get the first one and the second one, I think, now.
Yeah, if you get both. So if you don't have it, I think it's worth the $20, I think, to get both versions of the game.
Yep. It's a thinking man's first person shooter. Mm-hmm. It's like guys are coming at you, but you have time to think about the bullet flying toward you, about the things in your environment. So if you haven't tried it, it's worth it. If you had the old one, the new one's free. Give it a shot. So, George, how about you? As I recall, we have worked our way all the way through the alphabet to the letter K on your
almost halfway.
Your trip through these Steam games.
Yes. Humble Bundle Steam Alphabet Soup is on the letter K as we're recording this episode. And this time, K is for Kathy Rain.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the strangest throwbacks that I've seen of its type. So, set in the 90s, Kathy Rain tells the story of a strong-willed journalism major who has come to terms with her own troubled past as she investigates the mysterious death of her recently deceased grandfather.
Okay.
Okay. Kind of a standard, like, mystery fare.
So it's a mystery.
Exactly. Which I love mystery kind of stuff, mm-hmm. figuring out what happened. This game came out in May of 2016. Currently, it's priced at $14.99
really?
On Steam.
They're proud of it.
Jeez.
They are proud of it. And I think maybe they're a bit too proud.
Okay. Uh-oh.
So if you guys remember the point and click adventure games that came out real heavily in the 90s, there was a Blade Runner game that you would point around and click.
Oh, yeah. I love that.
Like
one.
The Monkey Island kind of Maniac Mansion
Monkey
sort of thing.
Monkey Island style stuff. Yeah. So, you know, you're just really, most of the time, you're running your mouse all over the screen trying to see where it highlights.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's how these games generally work. And you're trying to solve puzzles by, like, going and doing one thing, and then that'll allow you to do another thing. And it's on a very linear track. You kind of have to go and do the things in order. That's exactly what this game is. But the graphics are circa original Monkey's Island, if that
Ooh.
Makes any sense.
Like
they're
the
not
wave.
Good.
Oh,
like
EGA.
Well, yeah. And that's one of the parts that threw me, because I'm like, okay, if you're going to make a modern game that's going to harken back and throw back to that old era, I'm all fine with doing something like what Twin Cop did, right?
Right.
They had that 80s feel of the graphics, but they did it in a more modern, cleaned up fashion, which was beautiful.
Yes.
Neon Ninja was another example of that.
Yes.
And I'm good with that. This game did not do that at all. This is very pixelated, very, and not in a good way, like broken. And like, I had to check my monitor settings several times to make sure of what resolution I was at. You have to play it in window mode. If you try and play it in full screen, it's going to fritz out. So
that's
another one.
Good.
And so I was like, okay, maybe the story and the voice acting will save this. Well, the story kind of does. It's an interesting little story that's developing so far. I haven't completed it, but I probably will. The voice acting is not good.
Oh no.
It's kind of like how people who love
they keep piling up
animation from Japan and they're like, oh no, you have to watch it with the original Japanese voice actors because the American voice actors suck.
Right.
That's how this feels.
Mm. It feels like it's the American voice actor version.
Yeah. Like they don't quite get the tone of the scene well. John, I think I mentioned to you offline when we were talking about it's like she's at her grandfather's funeral and she's talking to her grandmother or people around her.
Right.
Her voice sounds almost upbeat. And I'm like, you're at a funeral. You should sound angry or
somber,
despondent
right?
or sad, somber, something, right?
It's like the voice actor didn't get the motivation cue.
Exactly.
Like you don't know what's going on. Yeah. The
now,
context.
That's not all of them, but that's the main character. I don't think she's good. She's just not good. It's that simple.
Mm.
The other voice actors are not bad. There's a couple of them that are very hokey, but there's a few of them that sound genuine and are keeping me in the story. The other negative to this is that it's very repetitive. Mm. You say, talk to grandma. She says the same greeting every time. Mm. You say the same thing back to her every time. And then it's just picking the list of the topics you want to talk to her about. You go to talk to the sheriff. It's the same thing every time. You want to distract the deputy so that you can get into the files. It's the same distraction method every time.
Not even just like two or three for variety. It's just like,
it's the same thing every time. And you, of course, have to do it multiple times at different stages
to get through all the trees of dialogue and stuff, right? Yeah.
It had a lot of potential. I can't recommend this game at $14.99. If you find it on sale for like $5, then it's probably worth it.
Really? You think so?
No, so the way you were talking, I thought you were going to say like it wasn't worth anything, but at $5, that means it's still an okay game.
Well, because I think of $5 as like throw away, I'll try it money, right?
Yeah.
That's how I think about it for video games. If a video game is worth, you know, if it costs me $5, okay, I'll give it a shot if it's something that looks interesting. So if you like mystery point and click adventure style games for $5, you know, you could spend an afternoon with this thing, but I wouldn't pay any more
than $5. Is like a, here's a tip to the creator, keep working at it. Good job, guy.
Exactly.
I'll
give you the stats on my Humble Bundle purchase, because I know John is always interested in my spreadsheet.
I want to know where we're at. Yes.
So this came out of Humble Jumbo Bundle 11. I bought it in March of 2018. I know, right?
Yep.
For $4.51, there are 12 items in the bundle that I purchased, so this game cost me 38 cents.
Well within your tolerance for the quality
of the
game.
Within my tolerance, yes. I couldn't give it a rating of anything more than 2 tokens, though, which is really sad.
That's
the lowest one I've rated so far. But it is playable. It's just they... I don't know. It just feels like they made so many missteps that it's like, well, they did what they could do, I guess. And I don't know why they're keeping it at $15 on Steam. I'd automatically reduce this thing to $9.99 to try and get some sales out of it.
Just start getting it. But, you know, you mentioned the pixel art design style, and I've always been torn about that because on the one hand, it's neat and nostalgic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. On the other hand, something in the back of my head says, and I could be wrong because I'm not a software developer. I don't make games. Something in the back of my head says, that's the easy way to go because I don't have to work on high quality assets. I can make pixel art pieces, and it's a shortcut almost that comes off as a look how hard we worked to make this retro
when
really
right.
it's like we just made really simple graphics so we didn't have to work so hard. Now, I could be totally off base on that, but that's how it feels to me.
Mm-hmm.
But some games, like you rightly mentioned, George, they take that 8-bit pixely aesthetic and they ramp it up with lighting effects and all this cool stuff. And it feels retro, but modern. It sounds like you fell on the opposite side of the fence with this Cathy Rain, that they went retro and it's just retro. They just like it's old technology. It's not modern at all.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I don't mind so much when developers do that, as long as they take that effort that they didn't use on graphics and put
somewhere
it
else.
Into story or the voice acting or the
more
direction.
Dialogue, more stuff like that. Yeah.
You know,
I hear you.
More options of things happening. If they do something like that, great. That's awesome.
Makes sense.
But
sure.
If they don't, then I'm going to give them a bad token rating. So
two tokens for 38 cents. There you go.
Yep. So we do have at least one glimmer of hope. We have another Steam key available to give away.
All right. Yep.
To all of our listeners. So this time we'll have the subject line be 8-bit is gone, but not forgotten.
All right.
And the Steam key is for a very fun game, Jackbox Party Pack number 4.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
Those are great. Yep.
I don't think I have that one.
Wait, there you go. If you weren't part of the channel.
Sorry, Mo.
No. Email right now.
Employees and family of Gen X Grown Up, not eligible to win.
So send us an email at podcast@genxgrownup.com. And we will be happy to send this Steam key to the first person who sends us that email. I think you'll really enjoy it.
Sense.
We sometimes play.
Yeah, we do. Yeah.
We sometimes play the Jackbox Party Pack games mm-hmm. on our Discord channel. So you mm-hmm. might even be able to join those and even host a game, you know, because anybody can host, not just us. So I think it's a blast. It'll be a fun Steam key.
Yeah. And what was the subject line again?
8-bit is gone, but not forgotten.
8-bit gone, but not forgotten. The podcast at genxgrownup.com. And you know what? Not all of our games we've given away have been claimed. I think people all think that they couldn't possibly be the first person to write. You might be. Some of them are unclaimed. So if you have a previous episode you wanted, give it a shot. You might win. And you might mm-hmm. win this one too.
You're working harder with your cleanser.
I don't think I am working harder. Comet cannot outclean my cleanser.
Okay, let's test it together on a tough, greasy food stain. We'll count the strokes.
I don't believe it. Comet cleaned the stain better than my product. This Comet is really something.
Comet puts more power behind every stroke.
Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.
Before we wind up the show, we always like to take just a few minutes here toward the end to talk about what we're looking forward to, things that will be coming out or released or available between now and the next time we get together for the show. And I want to start with you, Mo. This time, what are you looking forward to?
So in trying to find something to look forward to in this day of like limited media, started doing some research. And I ran across this show that's going to be on Quibi. Is that how you pronounce it? Yeah. Do you know that channel?
Yeah. Well, it's sort of a channel. It's like a service. It's like the little bite size, like 5-minute videos or something. It's kind of short form stuff.
But it's called Don't Look Deeper, and it's going to be out July 27th, and it stars Don Cheadle. So there's a little pedigree to it, right? And actually, I started looked at the trailer, and it actually looks super interesting. It's like a girl in high school, and things are a little weird, you get the impression, and she starts to think that she is not human.
Okay.
Because of the way things are going around her, and maybe things are like constructed around her, things aren't real, that kind of thing. And it kind
of... Like superpowers not human?
Like maybe she's not living, like she's an android or AI or something like that and doesn't realize it.
Oh, like she's art. Okay, gotcha. All right. Okay, maybe.
And, it's just questioning her whole environment around her and all that stuff. And so looking at it, the trailer doesn't give a whole lot away, but it was very intriguing to see where the story is going to go.
Okay.
So I was like, you know what? I'm going to put this on my list to grab because the trailer was enough to make me wonder what the hell is going on.
Don't Look Deeper.
Don't Look Deeper. On the 27th is when it's going to drop.
All right, cool. I am looking forward to, and we talked before the show that it was the obvious thing for me to look forward to. This is the first animated Star Trek since the animated original series. Star Trek Lower Decks comes out next week on CBS All Access, August 6th. One of our favorite episodes of The Next Generation was called The Lower Decks, which actually highlighted like the not stars of the show. It's not the captain or the engineer or the first officer.
The janitor.
It's the guy that services the replicator. You know, it's the janitor. It's engineer number 7 who's back there tightening stem bolts. You know, it's whatever. It's all these other people. And so Star Trek Lower Decks, it comes from some of the creators of Rick and Morty, but it doesn't look like Rick and Morty, although the trailer had some gross out stuff in it. So I guess Rick and Morty fans will have something to enjoy in it. But all of the new stuff coming out of the Star Trek franchise has been cool, in my opinion. I've enjoyed Picard. I've enjoyed Discovery. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with Lower Decks. They're trying to walk a line between very reverent to Star Trek, but still being humorous. It's a comedy. So I'm really intrigued.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to something a little lighter, honestly, in this. Because everything is super heavy. I mean, I love it all. I do.
Yeah.
But it's all super heavy. So having a nice light comedy view on it, I think it's going to be really cool.
Well, the fact that we all love The Orville tells us that there is room to have great science fiction and something and some levity, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a potential there. Now, this might be closer to the jokey part, but there's definitely room in Star Trek. Yeah. Star Trek Lower Decks, August 6th on CBS All Access. I am going to be there. George, how about you? What are you looking forward to, man?
All I got
to
say is two words. Muppets Now. And now sold. John's ears pick up.
When?
Right?
When?
Yes.
When?
Yes. It's a puppet show.
It's a puppet show for John. Muppets Now is those famous Muppets that we grew up with when we were kids. I'll give you just the brief description.
They're doing another series?
They are. They're doing a whole new series.
I didn't know that.
It's going to be on Disney Plus starting July 31st. This premise is Muppets Now will be an unscripted series featuring three different segments of a game show, a cooking show, and a talk show.
What?
So that's what each episode is going to be.
It's got to be the chef. Please be the chef.
They're going to have celebrities on each one of the segments, but the trailer, it's Kermit and the Muppet lawyer, who's also a Muppet, and he's like, nope, you can't talk about that. Nope, you can't talk about that. And Kermit's getting more and more pissed off as they go along. So I, as soon as I saw that, I was like, there's no way I'm going to get to put Lower Decks as the thing I'm looking forward to. So I just went in and typed it in for John. And I said, I got to find something else. And this popped up. It's July 31st.
That's great.
Disney Plus, which I already have as a streaming service. So that makes it just the more easy to access it.
Yep.
They do have a Wikipedia page that is listing some of the celebrity guests and some of the performers on it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You can go look at that if you want to look at spoilers if you like, but I'm not going to mention any of them here because I think it's going to be a unique spin on the old Muppet Show, which was
scripted, but was so much fun.
But was a variety show as well. Right,
exactly. I think this is going to be fun. I don't know how many episodes there are going to be. I don't know how long it's going to last, but it looks like it's going to be a blast.
Yeah. So first, I was so excited by the very, very short run Fraggle Rock thing that did on Disney Plus not long ago. That was neat. It was very, very tiny, bite-sized things, but it was cool. And I was so crestfallen when that the last Muppet series, or I think was just called Muppets on ABC, I think.
Yeah, that died.
I was saddened by that. But oh, I'm ready for some new Muppets. That's great news, George. You just made my day. I didn't know that was even coming.
Yep.
You there said you go. Puppets and he's happy.
I'm there. Puppets. I'm done.
Raining chocolate chip.
That's because now Duncan Hines chocolate chip cookies have more chocolate.
They're new.
Crispy, chewy, chocolatey, chewy. Now new Duncan Hines are chocolatey, chewy.
Duncan Hines are better than ever with 40% more chocolate in every bag.
Hi, this is comedian and writer, and let's be honest, I do a lot of things. This is Dean Archipotis, the host of Whiskey Business, the podcast not so much about whiskey as it is one with whiskey. Yes, we drink and talk about whiskey, but we do so much more with so many interesting people. For example, we talk to comedians like Greg Warren.
You know, I don't want to brag, but let's just say I can walk into a Red Lobster and get whatever. You know, I think the pause right there is probably more important than the word.
Amazing athletes like boxing champion Buster Douglas.
When a fighter's down and he's looking for his mouthpiece instead of trying to get up.
That's when I knew it was over.
Yeah, right?
And yes, Bigfoot chasers.
Do you believe in Bigfoot? And if so, does he really eat beef jerky?
The Bigfoot thing is people have seen these and I've seen a lot of compelling evidence about it.
It's Whiskey Business with Dino Tripodis. Join us for what we call a good conversation with a good pour. You really can't ask for much more than that, can you, people? Check us out at WhiskeyBusinessPod.com, a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network.
If there was anything in this show you'd like to learn more about, the show notes which accompany each episode are full of links to click and explore. Catch up on past episodes and get pinged every time a new one's released by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts. And you know, iTunes reviews help more than you know, so if you haven't yet, please rate and review us in the iTunes app. And if you have a friend who isn't yet listening, why not? Tell them about us, they'll thank you later. You're our fourth listener, and we'd love to read your emails right here on the show, so hit us up at podcast@genxgrownup.com. And finally, Gen X Grown Up is more than just this podcast. Our YouTube channel has hundreds of videos ready for you to enjoy, plus you can find our entire body of work on genxgrownup.com. That is going to wind it up for episode 77 of the Gen X Grown Up podcast. Before we leave, it is my distinguished pleasure to express our gratitude to the patrons who support us financially over on patreon.com, literally putting money in the bank and gas in the tanks for us to do what we do here on the podcast over on YouTube and on our website. And I'm talking about each and every one of you. T2, Chad, Arla, Matt, Jason, Adam, Jonathan H., David, Shelby, Slowmo, Thomas, Travis, Chet, Agile, Levi's, Dubaka, Greg Z., Dana, Mark, Stian, Blasteter, Stashit, Tom J., Greg L., Marcus, Ben, Tony, Dan, Davis, Lee, Mike C., and Stew Monkey. Oh, one breath. Oh, my God. I'm lightheaded. Oh, my God. More than 30 of you now. So, so grateful.
Kenny G. would be proud of you, sir.
I must not. I don't think I've contracted COVID because I got a big, big breath of air, so I think I'm okay.
Yeah, you're fine.
George, if someone has not yet signed up for Patreon and they would like to support us, would you please tell the fourth listeners how they can go about doing so?
Well, why not? I think all they need to do is go to genxgrownup.com/Patreon. You click a few buttons, you log in, you submit $1 to us. That means you love us and we love you. $2 means we love each other doubly as much. $3 starts to get you into some of that behind the scenes stuff that you hear everybody talking about on the interwebs and all the Twitters.
Everybody.
It's viral. They can't wait to see what we do next.
We've even got some levels up there for Patreon status that get you swag. And then there's even this new influencer level that's been created.
Woo,
that some, notch. You know, a couple of our patrons loved us so much. And we really, really appreciate what they did for us. They demanded a higher level of support.
And we delivered.
We did.
That's right. We can do that.
And they have even gotten some extra access to influence the way that we create content here at Gen X Grown Up. So I think that is a brilliant thing that is developed through the wishes of our patrons. So,
yep, we heard what they had to say, we love you. Thank you so much. Yeah, yeah. It's amazing.
Absolutely. Just go to genxgrownup.com/Patreon and you too can be a member of the Gen X Grown Up universe.
Awesome. Thank you, George. That is going to wind it up for this episode of the show. We'll be back in 2 weeks for the regular show, but next week is our backtrack. We pick a single nostalgic topic and dig in deep. Mo, tell the fourth listeners what's coming up next week.
Oh, it's going to be a battle royale. Let me tell you, it's the Star Trek debates, which we're going to hit some of the hotbed issues that Star Trek nerds all over love to fight about. And we're going to let John and George duke it out and see who comes out on top.
I'm so nervous. Why are you nervous?
We're just going to be arguing about stuff we've been doing for 40 years now.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't do debate. We'll see how it goes. But you should not be nervous. You should definitely catch that one. That'll be next week on the Backtrack. That's going to wind it up for us. Until then, I am John. George, thank you for being here.
Yes, sir.
Mo, you know I appreciate you.
Oh, man, always fun.
And fourth listeners, we all appreciate you most of all, and we will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
See you guys.
Take care, everybody. No life, no fun.
Don't you know that you're a grown-up? Gen X Grown Up is a member of the Evergreen Podcast family. Learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com. No more watching shows till sunrise. Unacceptable for grown-ups. Your dinner cannot just be french fries. Basically, life sucks as a grown-up.
Sounds vaguely dirty when you say let's head into the body of the show.
Let's lube it up and strap it on. Would that be better? Is that better or worse?
I'd say worse.
Okay.
All right.
Uh-oh. All right. Let me turn down my volume.
You turn down your volume, turn up your intelligence at the same time.
Same knob. Sorry.
He said knobs.
You know, a lot can happen in 7 minutes, and luckily, that's how long it takes me to tell a story. My name is Aaron Calafato, and I'm the creator of 7-Minute Stories. I'm proud to partner with Evergreen Podcasts, and I'd like to invite you to join me on this journey. I'm going to take you on some crazy roller coaster rides using my unique extemporaneous storytelling style, and together, we're going to try to make sense of the world, all through the art of storytelling, and all in approximately 7 minutes.